I? Or a gangster, but you couldn't look like a gangster.
I couldn't?
No, she said. You'd have to be the good guy. In the morning, he had breakfast with Jenny and walked her to school. I'll be away for a while, he told her. To buy stamps, she said. Most of his trips were to buy stamps, either for his own collection or, increasingly, for resale. This time he hadn't even packed a pair of tongs, let alone the Scott catalog he used as a checklist. Well, to look at some stamps, he said. I don't know if I'm actually going to buy any. He decided on the way home that it bothered him to lie to his daughter, but he couldn't see a way around it. This would be the first solo trip in a long time that wasn't philatelic in nature, the first return in a couple of years to a profession he had to keep secret. Julia knew, of course. Julia had known all along, and had even played a role once. But Jenny knew that he bought and sold stamps, and that he sometimes helped Uncle Donnie fix up houses so that they could sell them. That was all she knew, and it would have been inappropriate, not to say upsetting and even dangerous, for her to know more. Still, it bothered him. He'd packed the night before, and by the time he got home, Julia had already transferred his bag to the back seat of her Audi. He'd been bareheaded when he walked Jenny to school, but the fedora was on his head when he got into the passenger seat and buckled up. Ah, Julia said, you bought it for your trip.
I don't know why I bought it. I was planning on leaving it home.
You've evidently changed your mind.
I could still leave it in the car, he said.
But he didn't. She dropped him at the Amtrak station on Loyola, and he took off his hat to kiss her goodbye, and then put it back on again. Inside, with his ticket already purchased in advance and 2 hours before his train was scheduled to depart, he bought a Times-Picayune and a cup of coffee, and skimmed one while he sipped at the other. The coffee was all right. Trust New Orleans to have acceptable coffee even in a train station. But the paper didn't hold his interest, and eventually he drifted back to the newsstand and browsed the rack of paperbacks. Fully half the titles on display seemed to be by the same two writers, each of whom collaborated with a whole stable of co-writers. Keller wondered what would happen if the two main guys should merge through some sort of stock swap. They'd be a good bet to lock up every train and airport outlet in America, but could they get away with it? Would they run up against the Sherman Antitrust Act? One book, by neither of the two, caught his eye, because for a half second he thought it had his picture on the cover. Of course it wasn't his picture. The guy on the cover didn't look anything like Keller, but he was wearing Keller's hat, a dark gray fedora that looked exactly like the one on Keller's head. Well, almost. The one on the cover had a bullet hole in the crown, with wisps of smoke suggesting it had been recently bestowed. If the near miss bothered the hat's wearer, you couldn't tell it by the expression of grim determination that he wore as easily as he wore the hat. Call Him Jake was the book's title, and the publisher wanted you to know that it was the first volume in the Jake Dagger series. But it was the blurb that made Keller carry the book to the register and pay cash for it. He's a private eye. His life is booze, babes, and bullets. The train was the city of New Orleans, and once in a while you still heard Arlo Guthrie's song about it. It left on time, a little before 2, and was due in Chicago at 9 the next morning. Keller had booked a roomette, and once he was settled in, he took out his book and read a few pages. Years ago, when he'd lived on the east side of Manhattan a few blocks from the UN, a job had taken him clear across the country to Wyoming. He'd flown there and back, of course, and the state's population was lower for his having gone there, but what he remembered best was the book he bought before his flight. Well, not the book. All he recalled of it was its blurb, and he remembered that much word for word. He rode 1,000 miles to kill a man he'd never met. Hell of a line, he'd thought at the time. And he still thought so. But the one on Call Him Jake wasn't bad, either. When you took a roomette, you were in the care of a porter, and Keller's introduced himself shortly after the train left the station. He said, Mr. Edwards,